Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Hi there and welcome to the programme. I'm Declan Ralph.
And I'm Dave Daly.
Coming up on the programme today, in a moment, myself and Dave will be discussing some recent business headlines from the local and national papers.
This week, Brian Green is here in studio and we'll be turning the microphone around towards him, and I'm going to interview Brian about his own business.
Yep, we'll both be talking to Brian about his business and giving him a little grilling and putting the microphone in front of him rather than the people he's been interviewing on the road over the last few weeks. David Bell from the HR department will be here after that for his regular look at HR issues. And this week, I'm going to talk to him about the detail around the gender pay gap.
And finally in the programme, we have Karina Mooney, and she tells me all about her local meals delivered business.
Now, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories that we have on the programme this evening, you can contact us while the show is on air. The text line is open. It's 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. You can get us anytime on Twitter at @nearby_business. #localbiz. We're also on Facebook on the Nearby Business page.
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
So Dave, we have a couple of interesting stories to kick off the programme tonight. The Vikings say the revenue commissioners are coming.
Yes, and the other way around, not many people frighten the Vikings, I would imagine, they in the past with their pillaging and so on. But the revenue commissioners came face to face with them last week. A team of people from the revenue visited the sets of two of the most high-profile TV productions as part of a widening review of the sector. The pre-reigns visits took place on the sets of Vikings, the big-budget TV series produced by James Flynn of Octagon Films, and Into the Badlands, another high-profile TV series also produced by Flynn. And this was reported in last Sunday's Sunday Business Post. Jack Horgan-Jones told us Flynn said that the visit took place at the invitation of the production company, and we frequently invite state agencies to our sets to give a sense of high-end TV production, he said. Set visits involve seeing stages, sets and costumes. Octagon is seen as one of the country's most successful production houses, bringing series such as Penny Dreadful to Ireland, while also working on the high-profile domestic productions such as Love Hate. Last week's visits came against the background of increased revenue scrutiny of the film sector as the taxman works on a review of the much vaunted Sector 481 tax incentive structure, which is set to be take place this summer. The tax incentive is seen by many as a key part of the industry and its pitch to international investors, but comes with a hefty cost of around $142 million in foregone revenue across about 300 films. According to the Irish Film Board, the industry here also created the equivalent of 17,000 full-time jobs. So it's a kind of one hand is taking it away and the other is giving it back there. But they, you know, these incentives are good. It's good to show off Ireland on screen and all that kind of thing. And they're going to review the whole thing this year. So the revenue are spreading their net wide. We'll be talking about them a little bit later.
We will.
On.
We've more on the revenue a little bit later in the programme as well. I don't know if you heard that, but my phone thinks that you're me because Siri went off there in the middle of you talking.
There you go.
So I didn't think you sounded that like me.
Is that a compliment or what?
I'm not sure. Okay, the Dublin Airport, the new chief out there at Dublin Airport, he rules out a new third terminal.
Yeah, he said there's no need for a terminal, a third one at Dublin Airport until annual figures of passengers exceed 55 million, probably more than 20 years' time, he said. And that's the new chief executive of the DAA, Dalton Phillips. The airport boss also hopes to secure direct routes to cities such as Shenzhen in China, Tokyo and Delhi with the next 3 to 5 years, within the next 3 to 5 years as Dublin continues to expand. Last year, Dublin Airport handled just under 30 million passengers, having experienced a surge in traffic since the economy emerged from recession. He was speaking at the semi-state event yesterday, and it operates Dublin and Cork airports, and it released strong results from 2017. He said the capital's air gateway was returning to normal growth, he said, and he said that they hope to cope with 55 million passengers a year in the future without a third terminal. So he said until after that they won't need it. Modifications would need to be made to existing infrastructure.
Yeah, and it's interesting, they don't need a new third terminal, but they do need a new third runway.
Yeah, he said it will be an overnight. Dublin Airport will lose 2.4 million passengers, 8% of its annual total, unless planning conditions attached to the new third runway are relaxed. According to the same guy, chief executive of the airport, Dalton Phillips, he said he told a media briefing, the same one we were just talking about there yesterday, that it would be catastrophic for the Irish economy if it isn't changed. He wants the government to quickly pass new laws relaxing noise restrictions at airports to help overturn the planning conditions attached to the new runway, which costs $320 million, on which building work is due to begin later this year. They've the control tower already built there. Well, it's in construction at the moment. It's going to be the tallest structure in Ireland, actually, when it's finished.
Wow.
On the end of the runway.
Interesting.
Two conditions mean the use of the new runway would be prohibited between 11 p.m. and 7 a.m. and that nightly aircraft movements at the airport are restricted to 65. He said that there are 120 movements overnight at the moment, and the more restrictive regime would kick in if the runway construction goes ahead without changes. And he's a former chief executive of Brown Thomas, who took over in DAA in October, and he said the new runway is the most important thing that Ireland will build in a generation. And we were just talking about this earlier on, but it's interesting to see that they have a retail man gone into an airport. So it's kind of a big shopping centre where planes land
and come in. They do make a lot of their money, the DAA, from the commercial operations, both retail and
abroad as well. They're all over the place, and they're very good at it.
Managing airports. Yeah. And they were one of the first to have duty free. Well, the first to have duty free, of course.
So they know a thing or two about how to sell stuff. And that's it. So a lot of stuff happening at Dublin Airport, but no new terminal until there's a lot of new bodies, and then the runway will be first.
Yeah, well, I think there's plenty of capacity in Terminal 2, whatever about Terminal 1. Interesting, they're going to fly all the way to China, which seems fantastic. Okay, we'll move on. And as I said at the top of the programme, we're going to talk to Brian Green, who is a contributor to Nearby Business every single week that we've been on air. And Brian's been out on the road visiting businesses and putting the microphone in front of people and asking them about their business. And
can I make a comment about that?
You can, Brian.
I've met a lot of businesses, probably two a week for, 10, 11 weeks, and I'm surprised that they're all just out there doing their thing as their job. I thought there was going to be something more grandiose and, important about it, but they're just doing it every week, doing it every day, because that's their livelihood. They don't see it as, been much different from a PAYE.
Yeah.
And as a PAYE worker myself, I look at it
from that sector.
Yeah, it's totally different. But to them, it's like my job after earning money. That's what I do.
It's interesting. So you've been putting the microphone set in front of people, asking them about their business. Now we're going to turn that around and put the microphone in front of you.
Okay.
You've given up the day job and you're ready to launch into your new business. I suppose, first of all, tell us, what is the new business?
The new business is radio.ie, so it's a radio consultancy. So you said there that I gave up the day job. Well, the day job kind of gave me up. I lost my job, and it's like, where did I lose it? I had it in my pocket there the other day, and now it's gone. The role was made redundant, and it's just 9 months ago, on June 21st, and surprise, surprise, I've got to go and do something else. So you look for jobs, and you think, you know what? There's something I've never done that I really want to do. And I started working on building to this day today, when I can officially say that I'm now launching the business, because I had to get through regulatory stuff and stuff with the welfare and everything. And now I can launch and say that it's all starting.
Excellent. Just to go back to that, I mean, the day you were told we have no work here anymore, the position's been made redundant, how did you feel that day?
Initially, traumatised for about 15 minutes, and then a very good colleague of mine was chatting to me, and they put a new spin on what had just happened to me, and I could then see it in a very positive light. So I was able to turn it around on the day and look at it very positively, and I thought that was hugely important, because it could have been massively kind of traumatising and depressing to have faced into the situation. But I looked at the opportunities after 4 years with that company and many a year in PAYE, that I could look and do other things, and I looked at the opportunities rather than, oh god, this is gone, that's terrible.
Yeah, and yeah, because that's brilliant that you were able to get so positive so quickly, because a lot of people go into denial and they eventually come out of that cycle and then they realise, okay, I have to do something. But you were able to be positive from the beginning.
My colleague Madge said to me, if money was no object, what would you do? Mm-hmm. And it didn't floor me.
Great question.
But it just kind of said, do you know what? If it wasn't an object, I know what I'd do. I had the answer immediately. And it kind of made what was happening to me a little bit less difficult and a bit more irrelevant, because I knew what I wanted to do.
But I suppose as well it shows maybe something else that's important for us as human beings as well, is that, you know, I know you reasonably well. Radio and radio things have sort of been your hobby and have been your interest in life outside of the day job and outside of family and all of that sort of thing. So, you know, we probably, and you know, people who have a hobby that they are passionate about probably would love to try and turn that into a business opportunity if they get the opportunity. And mostly you don't do that because you're comfortable in your PAYE role, or you're comfortable in what you're doing and you don't want to rock the boat, and you might have enough for the mortgage next month and you might be able to feed the kids and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, when you were asked that question and you were able to get positive, say, well, okay, maybe there's something here in what I really want to do in life.
Yeah, so I've been in radio for 32 years and I've never had it as my job. And that was deliberate. I chose to. So I left school in 88 and local radio was licensed into 1989, and, you know, paid jobs with, you know, legal radio stations was on the cards. And I decided, do you know what? I looked at what it was and I said, I'm not going to press buttons for the man. And the man then is the man now in Irish media. And I wasn't going to do it. I thought it would be soul-destroying as selling ads in radio was, if you ever had to do it. It's not a fun job, or I never found it a fun job. And I decided I wasn't going to do that then. And I went and did other things in engineering and then the internet, and things took off in a completely different direction. And 32 years later, the internet and, you know, radio have clashed again. They clashed, you know, 14 years ago with podcasting came around the first time in 2004, and, you know, the internet and radio have a happy relationship.
Coexistence,
at the moment.
I suppose. Yeah. I think it's interesting there, you weren't going to press buttons for the man. So inside there, there is the entrepreneur. You know, you didn't want to be pressing for somebody else. Or,
well, that doesn't make me an entrepreneur. It probably makes me more socialist.
I think there's an entrepreneur in there as well. I mean, in the past you have ran your own business as well. You know, you've had
yes.
both roles in the past, both your own business and PAYE. And I know we don't need to go back into all of that, because we're going to look forward. And
yes.
we're going to be positive. So you got the news, you were being made redundant, and you very quickly got positive about that with help from Madge. And then you sort of, the cold light of day kicks in, you think, right, how do I go about this? What sort of help is out there for you, Brian?
You might think at the first there isn't a lot of help, but if you dig around, there is. And what I did was I went and sought out a course for start your own business. So it was 10 nights over 5 weeks in the local Baldoyle Training Centre, the ETB, formerly FOSS. And I did that course and it flew by, absolutely lashed by. And I've done courses with Learning Waves and Skill Nets for radio, digital for radio and stuff. So I took a couple of courses just to keep my mind active. Not that I actually needed to keep my mind active, because I'm studying the Masters up in DCU as well, so I just like to pile on more
on top of more.
More on top of more. But, yeah. You know, there is things. There's local enterprise boards. There's lots of assistance. And one of the first places to get assistance is actually down in the intro office. So the welfare.ie. They have, in conjunction with the Northside Partnership, lots of opportunities. You can immediately, when you become unemployed, you can opt to go short-term back to work. So it's like the long term back to work, but if you're shorter than 9 months unemployed, you can go on the short term scheme. And there's lots of things that they're not heavily advertised, so if someone gives you an inkling of news about them, go find out more. They will tell you that these schemes are there, and any courses you want to do, welfare will pay for them. They'll sponsor you onto any course you want to do.
Excellent, yeah. So there's a lot of help out there.
There is.
Go and look for it. Go and talk to the various government agencies and bodies that
and
are there.
As you get closer to setting up your business, and when you have set up your business, you can go to the local enterprise office, which is with Fingal County Council for where I live, and there's one for Dublin City as well. And they give you lots of assistance as well.
And okay. Just, can I ask you, what sort of an entity do you have? Are you just going to operate as a sole trader? Or, you know, the onuses of having a limited company are quite heavy, and you know, you've got to do annual returns and all that kind of thing. As a sole trader, you're effectively, you know, like perhaps a tradesman, or, you know, so you can't. I know that there are tax implications in both. What have you decided at the moment to do?
Okay, I'm going to do the sole trader for 6 to 12 months, yeah. And then if it is viable and better to switch, I'll switch. But there is new rules and laws from Revenue that makes this kind of this easier limited company where there's less directors and stuff. So I think you can have a two director company, mm-hmm. And they have made things a little bit easier. And it's also easier on exiting being in a company, in that you can now have a company, be self-employed, and go on the dole after, you know, the company failing. So it's making failure easier. Not that failure will happen more often, but when it does happen, it's not such a cliff that you fall off.
Safety net there. Yeah, I've my own business for 17 years, and you know, it doesn't get easier. I did one of those start your own business courses in Finglas Partnership at the time. It was very good, actually. There was some good, very good modules in it, and they cover a lot of different things lightly. And I remember in the class there was somebody with a kitchen business, and there was a guy who was a painter decorator, you know, and there was people hoping to do you know, the different kind of media businesses at the time. Like, it was quite a long time ago, but the infancy of the internet and all that kind of thing. But you know, you're going to offer services in this radio area, is it? This,
yeah, so I call it,
move on to that.
Yeah,
now,
I call just, it, yeah. I call it radio consultancy. But you probably then think that I'm going to consult to radio stations, and in a funny kind of way, I'm not, because they know what they're doing.
Okay,
name a station. They're on air. They know what they're doing, and they've got a balance sheet. And Near FM know what they're doing. They're here decades, and you know, I'm going to bring new entrants into digital radio.
So it's radio for non-radio people.
Yeah, it's radio for businesses, for NGOs, for state bodies. It's for charities, for all kinds of organisations. The opportunities, the cost of setting up and doing it, has fallen through the floor. It's so easy to do now, and it hasn't become easier to do, but it's become cheaper to do. And digital means that you can turn up anywhere. You can be on, you know, temporary FM licenses, or you can be on the internet all the time. You can be part time. You can just pop up for a week.
Yeah, just on the FM thing. The FM thing. I see one of the Nordic countries has stopped FM. They've gone digital completely. Is FM going to be a dinosaur? Is it the beginning of the end of FM? Or Ireland likes FM. We like radio in that sense. But, you know, we're talking about podcasts and things like that. People are choosing to watch TV and flick through the ads now, and they're listening to pieces on podcasts, and they follow people on podcasts. And, you know, the podcast isn't just a radio program that's cleaned up and put back out again. You know, it's not the best ofs or any of them things. They're actual dedicated podcasts, you know. And this is something that you have to get your head around a little bit. You sort of say, well, it's the same as a radio program, but podcast is a unique thing. So could, you know, are podcasts something businesses could use, and would people be interested in listening? General businesses, I mean, just...
Absolutely. So there's two ways of answering that. On the FM thing, in Ireland, yeah. FM's going to be here for a good long time.
Yeah.
Okay. The other way of looking at it is that you stop thinking it in the transmitter mentality or the platform mentality and how it gets you, because content is going to come at you whatever way it wants to get you, through a smartphone, through your car, through a transmitter, through a stream, through Netflix, and through things that haven't even arrived yet. It's going to come to you. So is podcasting good for business? Of course, because podcasting is storytelling, and storytelling is marketing, and marketing is great for business.
Sales, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's you know, it's not advertising, it's not hard sell. It's
Just say a credit union, for instance. I'm just picking this out of the air. A great centre of the community. We know about credit unions here. We run a promo for the local credit union. What could they, if they called you up tomorrow and said, what can we put into a podcast? Just as, you know, it's a bit difficult question probably, and I hope I'm not putting you on the spot, but if they said, we want to do a podcast, what could you put into it?
I would say that they need to look to stories within their organisation, from their staff, from their members, from their committees, and tell stories. And not stories about car finance and APRs. Stories about, you know, people and positive stories.
Yes.
People who've turned around tragedies. Stories
Good,
with
yeah.
people is what they need to tell. And those yeah. stories are all over the place, but they generally don't see them until yeah. they yeah. are focused and go looking for them.
Yeah, that's good, actually. I think there could be situations maybe where people get with money lenders and stuff like that. And they don't have to be, yeah. you know, you could say Mary and Joe had a situation and they came to see us and we were able to, with the help of, you know. And like, the credit union is a wonderful organisation, we all know that, and they got a lot of bad press these days from the sort of mainstream media. You know, they do a little sort of a thing here and there, and there are some branches that got into trouble, but it would be the really good idea, I think, for an organisation like that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And any business can think that they can tell a story through audio, through video, yeah. leak it out onto social media. That's what it's there for. Social media is not there for just, like, you know, what did Donald Trump tweet today and, yeah. and what did the news organisations say.
Yeah.
Companies can use it too, as we heard on last week, or was it the week before, with Mary Rose Lyons, yeah. that you have to tell stories, and if you can craft one and then tell it well and then deliver it cheaply digitally over the internet,
yeah.
because you don't have to own a transmitter or get a license and you know, buy a lot of expensive equipment and then get that to so many people, you're kind of bypassing all that transmitter mentality.
It's very interesting, isn't it?
It is. It's really interesting, and I'm struck by the fact that I've heard it a couple of times in different interviews and different business situations, that the content is king, really. As you say, the content will get to you whatever way it wants to get to you, be it FM, be it phone, be it digital, be it whatever it might be, but if the content is good, it'll find its way to you. So that's really where the effort needs to go, I think, in the future, is into the content. And I suppose that's where you can help people, Brian, as well, as to help them mould that content and craft that content into a package, so
that's
it
the
can,
plan, yeah.
Yeah, so it can be put out. So so that's part of the plan. Can you tell us what the first project, or what some of your early projects yeah. are likely to be for radio.ie?
So I applied to set up the business and start running from May the 1st, and I was brought forward a week this morning. So I actually started yesterday, and the first project starts on May the 1st, and it's a radio station called Shining Bright Radio. It's at Shining brightradio.com, and it's a collaboration with a wonderful author in the UK, Kelly Martin, in Gloucester, and between us we are bringing together a suite of programs from around the world in the kind of therapies and teachings and learnings and mental health area. And that kicks off on May the 1st. It's totally online, kind of podcasts streamed on the radio, and if you check out the website you'll see what it's all about. shiningbrightradio.com.
I had a look at it. It looks brilliant. It looks like something that would be very interesting. It looks very professional, I have to say, and that's just being honest with you. So it looks really, really good. Do you plan to employ anybody soon?
Yes, I do. Not soon, though. Maybe maybe after
steady
that.
Steady as she goes.
I mentioned about a year before I go to limited status, yeah. so I'd like to get all those kind of things sorted out and steady the ship, and then definitely do. And I would have never wanted to do that. I had a company for 13 years and there was 4 worker directors, and we didn't want to employ anybody because I feared you would be awake at night thinking about how you're going to pay your employees. I kind of matured, and I reckon that, yeah, there's some projects in my head, and it just makes no sense to not ever have an employee. I want to put things into organisations, and there are definitely going to be people employed doing what becomes of them. So there's like radio stations to happen, and it needs bodies, you know, every
people.
Day behind microphones.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, excellent. Well, Brian, we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
And thanks for your input on a nearby business out on the road. We have a favour to ask you over the next couple of weeks.
Go on, what?
Between now and the summer, we'd like to follow your progress.
Okay.
If we could.
Fly on the wall, kind of.
We'd like to check in with you every week and just see how the business is going, what the challenges are, what the obstacles are.
Yeah. Actually, I didn't mention, I'm starting a business. But there's a wonderful course in the ETB, Baldoyle Training Centre, starting. It's 104 weeks. So that's 2 years.
2 years, yeah.
And it's Thrive, Growing Your Business. And it's kind of very delivered digitally. And it's every couple of months you might have boot camps and come together and actually go face to face for a day or two. And they're going to mentor me through the 2 years of the start of the company.
Yeah.
So I can tell you all about what's happening up there and being inducted into that, because that kicks off in the next month.
Brilliant. Okay. Brian, thanks a million. Thank and as I said, again, the very best luck. Brian Green there. Best of luck to him with radio.ie. And shiningbrightradio.com is Brian's first project if you want to.
And they're on Twitter as well. I've seen them on Twitter there doing a few tweets.
I'm sure across all the digital platforms.
Absolutely.
So thanks a million for that. Now, Dave, before we just take a short break, Twitter have been closing down or removing, I suppose, some fake Irish government accounts.
Leo Varadkar's officials have agreed to deal with Twitter to ensure that fake accounts impersonating the government's official news service will be taken down immediately. Officials at the Department of the Taoiseach contacted the social media site over the reporting of fake accounts after several of them emerged in recent months. As a result of the contact, the department now has an arrangement with Twitter whereby accounts impersonating Merrionstreet.ie, the government official news service, are reported and immediately dealt with. One fake account was at Merrion Street, which had the name Strategic Comms Unit. It was responsible for the malicious tweet about the prison officer Brian Stack, who was killed by the IRA in the 1980s. A spokesman for the Department of the Taoiseach said that the contact was made with Twitter about fake accounts in general, and the at Merrion Street account had already been taken down.
Excellent, and so they should be. Coming up in the second part of the show, we have our usual contribution from David Bell from the HR department. I'll be talking to him about the gender pay gap this evening. And finally then, Karina Mooney is going to talk to myself and Dave about her local meals delivered business, and I'm getting hungry
yum, yum.
Even thinking about that. All of that to come on Nearby Business very shortly. And welcome back to Nearby Business. Don't forget, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories this evening, you can contact the show by text while we're on the air to 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. You can get us anytime on Twitter at @nearby_business, #localbiz.
Your HR questions answered on Nearby Business.
David Bell from the HR department is with me now. David, this evening we're going to look at the topic of the gender pay gap. I suppose the first question here, David, is this improving or is it disimproving?
Well, surprisingly, Declan, most people would think that there's been such awareness over the last few years with the inequality, particularly in the area of gender pay, that it would have improved. But I think there's a recent survey showed that, in fact, Ireland is getting worse. And I think it's been highlighted. There was obviously the relatively recently case of the RTE. And as you may remember, there was a big sort of disclosure of salaries, and I think the one that stood out was Brian Dobson was getting significantly more than his co-anchor, as they called him in America, Sharni Whalen. So that sort of caused some ripple. But I think generally speaking, it does seem to be, from the statistics we're getting, that there's still disparity in the workplace in Ireland on gender basis, yeah.
And do you think that that's intentional by employers, or is it something that sort of develops over time? And I was having this discussion with some colleagues in the office recently, and people are in the job for a long time, and by virtue of time, they tend to have a certain pay rate. And then others who are not there as long, by virtue of just the shorter time, sometimes are not paid as much. And I don't know if that's accidentally happening as opposed to intentionally happening.
Yeah, well, I think it is a bit of both. I mean, I don't suggest, and maybe a certain naivety, would you like to think that most people in the workplace now have a balance in terms of gender or any of the grounds of discrimination. But clearly there is a trend. I think that's the problem. And there isn't probably anything that we could pinpoint and say that it is, sexist or anything like that. But there's no doubt. And it may be that traditionally men were paid more for different reasons. And I don't know if it's the fact that people don't fight as much for us or what the reason is. But, there's no doubt that it's endemic in a lot of businesses. So you would think that it's probably not intentional that they're aiming and targeting a group, but that it's somehow built into the structure of the business. Yeah. As we call it, it's sort of indirect discrimination. So often when people hear discrimination or inequality, there's a sense that it's done with full knowledge and full intent. Yeah. And very often you find in any discrimination case that it's often indirect discrimination.
Yeah.
The person doesn't realise that they are actually discriminating against someone in a strange way. So yeah, I think there's probably a bit of both. I think there's definitely cases where businesses do it on purpose, but I'd say given that the gap between the two and how endemic it is, there has to be a cultural difference there as well that probably people aren't aware of.
And, I mean, you mentioned a high-profile case there of Brian Dobson and Sharon Lee Volan, and there are other media ones across the water in the UK and here at home as well, where people have, you know, there, it has been highlighted. But apart from those, are there any particular industries that are, you know, more prone to this than others, say?
I don't think, again, I think one that people were surprised about, there was one in the States where Google got themselves into awful hot water. And again, I think the image of these companies is one of progressiveness and equality. And, you know, I think people were very surprised to hear that companies such as that would even have any issue about it. Because, you know, clearly they're very, very senior people who are female, and they're not around long enough to go back to the point that you're making.
Yes,
earlier that, you know, they're not a traditional industry. They've been around for 50 or 60 years, or, you know, so I think people were very surprised. So it is worrying from a HR perspective that this is going on and continues to go on. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
So it isn't. I don't think it's limited to any industry. I think, unfortunately, the studies would show that it's across the board and that it is a problem. And I think a lot of companies are now having to, you know, look at themselves and, you know, examine what their pay structures are and to see is there any equality, and obviously to try and take steps to rectify it.
Yeah, and what's the law in this regard? I mean, is in employment law, does it state that people are paid equal amounts for equal,
yeah,
you know, an equal,
yeah,
job? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Employment Equality Act is the main piece of legislation, and that is the 9 grounds of discrimination, which include, you know, gender, race, marital status, etc. People will be familiar with that. But there is specific, you know, grounds on equal pay, so like pay for like work, and that is, generally speaking, when that goes before an equality authority or an enforcement officer, it's what they call strict liability. So there's no real wriggle room. If they discover that you're paying someone different rate for doing the same job based on their gender or anything else discriminatory, it will be found against you straight away. So it is what they call a sort of a strict liability case. And the fine, I mean, you can get awards of up to 3 years salary and compensation, as well as being reinstated at the higher amount. So, you know, it is obviously very costly for businesses if they do find themselves. And clearly, you know, so I mean, I think part of the problem here, Declan, is the disclosure. So, you know, as you mentioned, you talk in the office, people, it's one of the things that people keep probably closest to their chest is what they earn.
Yes.
And they don't even often tell their family, never mind their colleagues. So
True. It's
really sometimes trying to find out. So someone might suspect that they're getting paid less, and then they go and look for that information, and then of course it's private and it's confidential, and I can't disclose that, and we can't disclose other people's salaries. So often that is a challenge. But if it does get into the domain of the person making the claim, the company could often. But as I said, it's a strict. So if they find that there's a difference, they don't really. There are certain circumstances you can justify discrimination, but they have to be objective. So it's a lot of this, as we discussed on numerous occasions, this what's reasonable and objective is the legal basis for it. And so what that is you know, is as it's looked on a case-by-case basis. So you'd have to look and see what's reasonable. Is it reasonable? And it could be, as you say, it could be that the justification is length of service or qualifications or whatever, but they would have to be looked at on an individual basis.
Okay, and obviously, as you say, it's difficult for an employee to find out what their fellow colleagues are earning, but obviously the company will know this information. I suppose the advice would have to be to companies listening to us that if you know and are aware of this within your business, you need to make steps, I suppose, to fix it fairly quickly.
To rectify it, absolutely. And certainly if it's a conscious decision, certainly one would have to be very careful that it's changed. And if they find that for some reason this has happened, maybe it developed over time, as you alluded to, that for some other reason this has happened, they would certainly need to start. They have to be aware that there's obviously a risk there. If it does get in to a particular case, and they should look at rectifying it, absolutely.
And in the UK, they've introduced mandatory gender pay gap reporting for businesses with over 250 employees. Is that something you see that will come to Ireland as well?
Well, look, I think a lot of these things, they tend to follow, don't they?
They do.
You know, all it takes, and there's been a lot of these, you know, be it the retirement age, the UK made, you know, mandatory retirements. They stopped that. We didn't go as far as that, but not you know, halfway there. And I think likewise, I think anything like that that comes about because of the profile and the Equality Authority has, you know, and they do make high awards. So I think, it'll probably start to have to come out because it's interesting to link it with the gender, not the gender, but the data protection to see how that goes, given that that's
yes.
that hot topic that keeps creeping into everything. But notwithstanding that, I think they mightn't do it straight away, but I think it's inevitable. If there's any sense that there's such a gap, I mean, I think it was like 14.5% or something, the legislators are probably going to have to start looking at something to show that they can act against it. Yeah.
Interesting that the gap is widening as opposed to narrowing, which you would probably, expect.
Again, I think if you asked, you know, as I say, the average man or woman on the street, they think that, you know, in modern times, there's a lot more women in the workplace doing the exact same job, very successfully, of course, that, you know, that this can't be happening. It's unlikely to be happening. But that's obviously not the case. So,
yeah. And you said there in terms of exceptions to this, and there are some grounds. What could you give us an example maybe of what an exception might be?
Well, again, I suppose, as I said, you know, some of the things could be just based on the individuals themselves. There might be something that, while on the face of it, it looks like, you know, it's a man and a woman in this instance doing the same job, that, you know, it's the same, but it does creep into where I give an example that came up recently, and it's not really about pay, but it's about maybe additional pay. So you'll probably recall the paternity. You know, a lot of people, some businesses top up maternity leave. That's sort of the vernacular. So there's maternity benefit, and a lot of businesses will pay some or all of the balance between the maternity benefit and the to the woman who's on maternity leave. So when the new paternity legislation came in, which allowed men 2 weeks off, there was some discussion about whether employers who did that topped up maternity would then equally have to top up maternity. And I think the case law suggested that that's not the case. So it's slightly different, but in other words, it's saying just because you pay a woman who's on maternity leave a top up, you don't have to pay a man. So it's more around circumstances that give rise, rather than, I think, the old mantra of like work for like pay is still going to be enforced quite heavily. But there may be circumstances where you're not caught, and that would be one of them, where just because you pay someone top up maternity, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to pay it for someone who's on paternity leave. So that's, technically you could say that's discrimination again.
And David, finished there. The line must have dropped with him. Finished very quickly. Thanks a million, David. As usual, a comprehensive look at the topic that we were talking about there. And of course, the topic this evening was the very interesting one of the gender pay gap. Okay, we're moving on now to the next section of the show.
The Business of, on Nearby Business, on 90.3 Near FM.
Okay, we're joined live in studio by Karina Mooney, and she's from Locale Meals Delivered, and they cook fresh food, chef prepared, portion controlled, restaurant quality breakfast, lunches, dinners and snacks, and they deliver them nationwide if you want. And if you're planning to lose weight or gain weight or eat healthier or gain muscle through protein or calorie controlled diet, there are varieties of meal plans that can help you support your goals. Many people struggle to find information or time to prepare or cook their own fresh and healthy meals, so there's no need to worry, because Locale Meals Delivered, this sounds like the ad actually, is here, and they actually are here sitting beside us in the studio. So you're very welcome, Karina Mooney, and Locale Business is a local business from Balldoyle. Can you describe to us, first of all, you're very welcome.
Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. Can you maybe just describe to our listeners what your business is?
Well, we deliver healthy, fresh cooked meals. It's not rocket science, it's just regular food. healthy takeaway, if you like, not the greasy takeaway. You know, it's there, it's in your fridge, you won't order rubbish.
Okay, tell us a little bit about yourself and your own journey to this business.
Well, I come from a background of hosting, waitressing, insurance broker, everything. I've done it all. But every job I've ever had, you're sitting there at lunchtime and you're going out for lunches with the bosses, grabbing sandwiches. There was never a company like this, and I always wanted something healthy brought to me. So I thought about this for a long time. And then with recession, my job was offering redundancy. I had small kids, so I took it. And then, unfortunately, my marriage broke up, so I had to think of something quick that would give me a lifestyle that I could spend time with my kids and sustain ourselves, pay our mortgage, the usual. So my sister and my brother were chefs at the time, so I asked them to help me with this idea. They said yes. We started in the kitchen, cliche, but we did. We started cooking for family, friends, and everybody loved the idea. We went ahead, we did it, it was good, and then we decided to go for it.
Very good. You mentioned there that you have family chefs in the family. I'm going to say that to you. So if your business gets a bit of an onslaught of business inquiries, and you have a wonderful website which describes everything you do and shows lovely meals and the calorie count and so on. So if you get a large order, is that something you can cope with? If you get a lot of business in the one particular, like after you're going to be on the RFM, you've got a little business.
Oh, God, yeah.
Just to say, is that you've got depth there to be able to cope with.
Oh, yeah, we do, yeah. I could drag them all back in.
And do you work from a business premises or do you work from home still, or what way does it
Oh,
do?
No, we work for a commercial kitchen in the Baldoyle Industrial Estate.
Very good.
A friend of mine that actually owns her own business, when I started, offered to let me share that with her, so we do that.
And there's a certain amount of food technology in this then. You mentioned calorie control, so you have to know the portions and the quantities and the actual food technology that will give you those calorie counts, sort of for a medium breast of chicken and whatever. So that's all a lot of background work that cost money to get into that, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, you can do that yourself.
Yeah.
There are a lot of apps out there that you can buy and do the nutrition count on your meals.
Okay. So when you were starting the business, how did you fund yourself? Like, did you, was that difficult for you?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, okay.
It was kind of a make or break situation. Either had to start it. Now, I wouldn't recommend this to other new businesses. Go get your funding.
Yeah.
Get your money. It's a struggle if you don't. But we're here. We're still here 4 years later. We've done it.
Well done, yeah.
But yeah, no, we didn't have money. I had to borrow money off my brother, and you know.
Well, they say that's the best way. Sometimes to get.
He still hasn't got it back.
Though. Okay, well then we won't. Hopefully he's happy. Maybe you send him around a few meals. What drives you forward then at this stage? 4 years in, you know, are things getting more difficult or easier? How do you find it? What drives you?
There's always something, isn't there? There's businesses open up the same all the time, but in the last 4 years they've opened, they've closed, you know, some are still there, some are gone, so we're one of the lucky ones that are still here. But I mean, I love what I do. I love to help people. I love the phone calls I get, the weddings, you know, going through with somebody there for 6 months, feeding them, helping them, and then on the day getting the photographs, and it's just amazing. Like,
so somebody wants to have a personal plan to say, I want to be able to, I'm busy, so I need to be able to have the proper lunch and dinner, and if I book into this for 5 days a week at least, and maybe at the weekends I'll do my own thing, and then they know that they're controlling their input and they're not coming home at 7 in the evening and ringing for the pizza or takeaway. That's the fundamental behind
what
you do.
That's exactly what it's for.
Yeah, that sounds really...
I mean, because you do have to live as well.
Yeah. Like. And what are the biggest obstacles that you encounter, just to, you know, as a female business person and also as a small business person?
Well... Again, it's funding and money. Now, we have been to LEO, the local enterprise board, and we have got great funding now for a new website for marketing. So there is stuff there, but you need to know where to go.
Yeah.
And then there's competition all the time.
Yeah.
So it's just you have to watch your back and keep up to date.
I'm just interested in your suppliers. Obviously, you have a number of suppliers. Would you tell us a little bit about them? How do you find them? Like, how do you discover where to get the product and all of that side of the business? Because you've got to get the input into the meal. How does that all happen?
Well, as I said, my sister and brother are involved in the food industry.
Right.
So, like, we try their suppliers, and then the girl I work with try her suppliers. But they're all local. We have, like, Vernon Stores, Kerrigan Meats, Super Value, a packaging company in Baldoyle as well. So, yeah, it's all local.
So you're trying to keep that local. And then you were saying earlier that, like, you know, and Dave was saying about, you know, you package it up for the week, send so many dinners, so many lunches, what have you. How do you get that out to the customer? What mechanism do you use to deliver that out to people?
We use DPD couriers. They have a food delivery service.
Right.
So that goes with them.
And is it temperature controlled or?
Yeah, the nationwide ones would be in a temperature controlled box with ice packs, and then we have a guy that does our local deliveries in a temperature controlled van.
All right.
Where he take our stuff with just ice packs in the bags.
Okay, and that's a contractor that you employ directly, and in terms of that side of the business, you know, in terms of deliveries and all of that, do you use any of the services, you know, like I'm thinking of JustEat.ie or people like that?
Are you working in collaboration
with any of them?
Yeah, we use Just Eat, we use Marvin, there's another guy called Flipdish.
Deliveroo?
No, not Deliveroo. They're only in the city centre, I think.
Right, so. Okay. So they're not out as far as Baldoyle yet.
Don't think so.
Excellent.
In advertising terms, it sounds really good, all that kind of thing. What do you advertise on the local newspaper or social media, or how do you Facebook? And what's your main?
Mostly Facebook at the moment, but we have, as I said, we got the grant, so we have a marketing company coming along, and they specialise in social media marketing,
right.
And they're going to take over that, go Instagram, whatever, everywhere.
Yeah, just on the what about older people? Say, you know, if there are older people living at home and maybe a little bit infirm and maybe they can't prepare their own meals, is that a market that you can cover?
Yeah, we do. We even did white mashed potato on the cottage pie for them.
Oh, very good. I like that. So specialist dishes. No, but it is a market. I can see it. I know about it myself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we had Ken Kilbride here a while back, and he does the ready meal sort of things in the supermarkets and so on. But if somebody's getting it delivered and you develop a personal relationship with an older person and they like to eat particular things, you know, you can really do very well, I'm sure, at that.
Yeah, we can switch most of our meals to kind of a traditional, more traditional dish for older people.
What's the most popular dish, Karina?
Oh, Thai chicken curry.
Thai chicken curry. It is quite healthy, Thai chicken curry, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I mean, it nearly sounds too good to be true, but it is actually quite healthy.
We just don't put in as much coconut milk as the restaurants would.
Mm. Okay. That make it even healthier?
Yeah.
Okay. I must remember that one. I like the Thai chicken curry, Dave.
And how many, without being market sensitive to your competitors, but what sort of volumes are you doing? And I'm not asking money-wise, but just units maybe, perhaps in a month or a week or whatever.
Well, we could do anything from 60 to 100 people a week.
Right. Very good, yeah. So you have multiples of meals in that case for whatever, yeah?
Yeah, with all different various plans. And
yeah.
They could have a breakfast, lunch, dinner option, or they might just go for 10 dinners or
And
if you had a magic wand and, you know, money was no object and you had all the support you needed, what would you like to do with this business? Where would you like to see it going?
I'd just go bigger and more nationwide.
Right.
We only started nationwide, so it's quite small at the moment, but hopefully
you'd like to expand it a bit more.
And I'd love a new kitchen.
You'd like a new kitchen. Would you like your own? You said you're sharing it at the minute.
Yeah, that's the next plan.
Okay, so you'll get your own premises and...
And our own vans, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your website's really good. And your plans for the future then will be, your wish list will be the new kitchen, the new vans. All that will come, of course, with the progress that you're making, by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, Karina, thanks a million for coming in and talking to us today about that business. A great initiative, a great local business based in Baldoyle. And we wish you the best of luck to it. And the website again is lowcalmealsdelivered.ie, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah? And you're on Facebook as well.
We are.
And good old Google will find you anyway. It will indeed. So locale meals delivered. Thanks a million, Karina, for that.
Thank you.
Thanks
no
very
problem
much.
At all. Okay, Dave, we said we'd come back to the revenue commissioners before the end of the programme, and the old reliable P60 and P45 are to be scrapped.
Yeah, we had the accountant in a few weeks ago speaking about what happens on a revenue audit, and one of the things he mentioned to us was that the revenue will, in future, and some countries have introduced this in Europe already, that they will be asking people to lodge their invoices online with the revenue 4 days, up to 4 days after they have done them, so they know exactly.
Effectively real time.
Yeah, in real time. Yeah. So you're like, they know everything about you, when incoming and outgoing and all that kind of thing. So it's Big Brother stuff. So this is probably similar what they're doing here. The revenue are to scrap the P60 and P45 forms in a bid to modernise the PAY system. Revenue has announced plans to scrap the traditional methods in its latest annual report published yesterday. Revenue outlined its new modernisation approach to the PAYE system yesterday, as I said. For employers, the new system changes current end-of-year reporting practices, and employers will, from the 1st of January 2019, be required to report payroll data to revenue each pay period. Employees will be able to view all data employers report to revenue on their behalf. The start of the real-time payee reporting will be the 1st of January 2019. It will also eliminate the need for P30s, P45s and P60s, along with the end-of-year returns. A P60 certificate of an employee's annual pay and deductions. A P45 is a statement of the employee's pay and deductions for the year up to the date they leave their employment. And Revenue said it will ensure that ongoing tax employee tax deductions and contributions are correct. And Niall Cody, the Revenue chairperson, said the most real-time PAYE represents an important step in the process of continuous improvement in the service compliance and efficiency of administration of the tax system.
Yeah, it sounds great, and that real time, it'll be very efficient and all that, but again, it's putting a little bit more onus back onto the employers.
Yeah,
and perhaps more than they currently have, or certainly more more prompt response to what they might be doing at the year end as well, because they'll have to do it ongoing.
Yeah, it's another thing that has to be done on the revenue.ie. I'm sure there will be people groaning at that now and saying, "Oh, yeah, that's something else I have to fill in." So things like the returns, you know, the ones, excuse me at the moment, you have to return the weights and the statistical information. You know, they're
weights and measures.
I know
people,
that. Yeah, they're difficult to keep up to date with. Yeah. It's just for statistical stuff in a year thing. They're actually the Eurostat, I think they're called, so they like to know what's coming in and going out of the country. They are the bane of people's lives. They're kind of information that's not really that important, but it is, but it isn't, and it doesn't keep your, like, it's not important for you getting orders out the door every day.
Exactly. But it's important to the government that you do it, and it's important you do it or they'll be after you.
Yeah.
We've two kind of and finally stories
and
now
finally,
to finish up.
Yeah.
So we've two and finallys. The first and finally is, and I'm sure Karina or anybody would like to win this, would you like to win a feckin' house?
Well, did you ever lose your feckin' keys? Because if you owned this house and you did, that's what had happened. This sounds like something that would happen on
Craggy Island. That's not rude at all.
On Craggy Island. No, well, let me tell you.
No.
This is a beautiful house. You fancy winning a house. St. Feckin's GAA Club in Thairmann Feckin, Drogheda, are giving away a house as part of their Win a Feckin' House fundraising campaign for the new community centre. It's got a landscape garden, rear patio, solar panels, 4-bedroom house, and it could be yours for €100 ticket. Now, it was launched on Friday. There are 8,000 tickets up for grabs in the giveaway, and they will be announcing the winner at the end of the year on the 30th of December in Drogheda. And since the competition was launched at the weekend, they had an estimated 400 tickets have been sold. And that's the chairman of the finance for the club. He says, we're testing out our website on Wednesday night, and people somehow became aware of it. Between the night and the next morning, they sold 150 tickets before they actually launched it. The club are not only targeting the local community, but the Irish who are abroad. And they said, this is for people living in Dubai or Australia, and this is something that could be very attractive to them if they wanted to come home to their feckin' house in the end of the day. But, I remember I did actually sponsor St. Feckin's Football Club,
did
and I
you?
Thought it was a joke. But he actually gave me the leaf receipt or whatever for they were running something a few years ago, and I had to laugh at it. But it is in Thairmann Feckin.
Thairmann Feckin, County Louth, just north of Drogheda,
no
there between Drogheda and Dunlear.
No sign of Ted or Dougal at all.
Not. It is a real place and a real thing. And finally, our finally story is about the bad weather and the impact it has had on two things, I suppose, you know, that you might expect, is the sale of ice cream and the sale of sandals.
Yeah, we're all sick of it now. We had a few days of summer last week. Some bathers won't be the only happy ones if we see the end of the 2018, and it seems to have finally come to an end. doubtful on the last couple of days. It's been cold again. And this is in the US. New data from the US headquarters of business and weather intelligence shows that the demand for garden plants, women's sandals and ice cream fell sharply among Irish shoppers in March.
Surprise.
There
surprise.
You go. So you weren't going around in the snow in your sandals, and you certainly didn't want ice cream.
And you didn't want your just a one cornetto. Well, that is it for this week for Nearby Business. Thanks a million to all our contributors this evening. We'll both be back at the same time next week. Don't forget, in the meantime, if you've a comment on any of the stories featured today or an idea that you'd like to discuss with us, get in touch with us on Twitter at @nearby_business, #localbiz. So from me, Declan Ralph.
And me, Dave Daly.
We'll see you soon on the radio. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.